League owners meeting today in Atlanta. The big issue, well, the thing we know that they're going to address is the awarding of Super Bowl 52, but looming over the entire process is this concept of playoff expansion. We've had multiple owners talk about it over the past several months, most recently and most loudly, Cowboys owner Jerry Jones talking about the fact that it's a matter of when, not if. Now, John Mara, the Giants co-owner, opposes it. If nine oppose playoff expansion, it won't happen. The commissioner has been talking about it so much, though, and so many owners have been talking about it, it feels like it's inevitability. I think that what's going on, though, is before the NFL officially adopts playoff expansion, it wants to have its ducks in a row. The networks, they're going to be paying huge money. That's why they're doing this. You need to know what the networks are willing to pay. You need to have a proposal or at least a rough estimate that can be presented to any owners who may be having misgivings about playoff expansion. Those misgivings may go away quickly once the owners see the dollars and cents that would attach to expanding the postseason. And then there's the separate question that Jerry Jones led us into on Monday. Everybody assumed that the union was going to be a big part of this process. Well, the NFLPA, to the extent that playoff expansion is going to happen, believes that it has a voice in it. The question is, how big of a voice, and ultimately does the NFLPA have any control over this process? And as best I can tell after talking to some people about it and trying to harmonize the various positions that are out there, and this gets complicated fairly quickly, but I'm trying to keep it simple. When you've got a union situation, as the NFL obviously does, any changes to the terms and conditions of the working relationship, and this would clearly be a change to the working conditions, two extra postseason games, that is something that there is an obligation to negotiate with the union over. You can't just roll it out without discussion. You have to meet with them, you have to confer, and you have to make sure that they understand. Now, ideally, you have an agreement, but you don't have to have an eventual agreement. You can bargain to what the law calls impasse, to the point where you want to expand the postseason, the union doesn't want to, the union wants something else in return, the league doesn't want to give it up. In theory, the league could at that point say, well, we're at an impasse, we're going to go ahead and do this. Not the best way to preserve and maintain a long-term relationship, not the kind of thing that is conducive to a quick resolution, and also it's the kind of thing that could result in litigation. The question becomes, how far does the union want to push this? On one hand, yes, the union does have the opportunity to confer with the NFL over the question of whether or not the playoffs will expand, but at the same time, the NFLPA, in the league's mind, doesn't have final say, doesn't have the ability to block it, doesn't have the ability to say, unless we get X, Y, and Z, there's no way we're going to do this. And already we've seen that NFLPA Executive Director Demore Smith has suggested that this workers' compensation issue that is floating around from time to time right now, it's bubbling to the point of boiling in Louisiana, that in some way is going to be tied to playoff expansion. And this gets back to the very delicate process, as far as the league should be concerned, of wanting something but not wanting it so clearly and not wanting it so obviously that the NFLPA will resist just to get something else. Because really, the NFLPA should want playoff expansion when you look at it objectively. It's two extra games. You're probably going to have one less week of the preseason as part of this, and there's going to be a lot more money for the parties to share. But as former Vikings and for a short time Raiders punter Chris Cluey pointed out to us last night, he sent me a text on this point, even if that money from playoff expansion goes into the calculation that becomes the salary cap, you've got 32 owners taking up their half, and you've got 1,800 players with their half. For the 1,800 players, it means a lot less. And for what the players get for the postseason, it's a lot less in the grand scheme of things. So the union could say, give us more money for the playoff games. Give us this, give us that. We want this, we want that. And I think the NFL is trying to avoid it. I think the NFL wants the NFLPA to say, well, you know what? This is a win-win. This is a good idea. We don't need anything else. We're happy to take the additional revenue for the salary cap from the playoff games that will be added via expansion. We're happy to take one less week of the preseason. You don't have to give us anything else. I think the NFL is trying to find a way through this minefield without having to give the NFLPA anything else. We'll see what happens with that. In Miami, the negotiations have not gone quite as planned for Dolphins owner Steven Ross. He's been trying to get his stadium upgraded so that the Super Bowl will come back to Miami. The NFL's made it clear, unless and until Sun Life Stadium is upgraded, no more Super Bowls for South Florida. So, Stephen Ross tried to get some public money last year to help upgrade the stadium. It was a moderate tax increase for hotels and motels in Dade County. Didn't even get to the floor of the Florida legislature. So instead of trying to do that again, Stephen Ross decided this year, well, look, I'll go ahead and pay for it myself. He can afford it. He's worth $4 or $5 billion. I'll pay for it myself, but I want a break on the property taxes that I pay for this huge piece of land where Sun Life Stadium and the parking lots may be. And as of today, that has been dropped by Stephen Ross and the Miami Dolphins. And look, on the surface, you look at it and say, the guy can afford it. The guy can afford to upgrade his stadium. He can afford to build a new stadium. He owns the stadium. He should do whatever he wants to do. He doesn't have to worry about public money. He can afford it. But from the perspective of the other 31 owners who are, from time to time, some of them at least, trying to get public money for either upgrades to stadiums or flat-out construction of new stadiums, this is not going to be a shining example that you use to get public money, because the people in South Florida, at least the government officials in South Florida and throughout the state of Florida, have said no to Stephen Ross, and he's going to go ahead and upgrade the stadium on his own. So not exactly the precedent that you want to set when you're one of these other owners trying to get public money. So the question is this the start of a new trend, or is it an aberration? It's going to loom over whatever the next effort is to get public money to help rebuild or build from scratch a stadium. And maybe Buffalo is the next spot for that. Now, in Buffalo, there's a greater threat of relocation. I think that's the message to take away from Miami experience. Stephen Ross was never going to move the team. If there's no threat, express or implied, to move the team, it's going to be harder and harder to get public money. In Buffalo, it's a different story, because there is a very real threat that the next owner will move the team. We're going to move on to the next topic. We're going to talk Vikings with Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. A lot happening just today with Minnesota. Both of their first-round picks, they've had multiple first-round picks like every year for the last three, both have agreed to terms on their contracts. Well over 25% of all draft picks have agreed to terms. It's not even been 2 weeks since the draft started. And then we're going to wrap things up by talking to you for the second day in a row. Great questions yesterday, great phone calls, great Twitter questions. We're ready to roll with that. Before we open the floor to PFT Planet, we're going to open the phone line to Chris Thomason. We'll talk to him after the break. We'll be right back. This is PFT Live.
Me being a student of the game, just wanting to get better each and every day. You know, I'm always eager to learn, so each day, you know, we're just eager to learn. Matt and Christian, those guys have been here for a while now, and you know, those guys have taken me under their wing and just been teaching me, you know, whether it's from the field standpoint or from the film standpoint, you know, just trying to catch me up to speed.
New Vikings quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, the last pick in round one, talking about his new team. Some people thought he'd make it all the way out of round one. He was the last man taken as the Vikings sprang back in via trade with the Seahawks to get Bridgewater. Joining us now to talk about all the new Viking players arriving via the draft and possibly otherwise, Chris Thomason of the St. Paul Pioneer Press. And I want to start with Bridgewater. It's a quarterback-driven league. Bridgewater was one of the guys regarded to be a top five pick. He ended up going in the 7th-5. What was the reaction generally among the fan base to the selection of Bridgewater?
I think it was positive. I mean, obviously, fans will be fans. They wanted Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, and there was some general groaning when they passed him up earlier in the draft, especially taking Anthony Barr. Fans read mock drafts, so they see that Barr was picked by many to go in the second half of the first round. So there was a little bit of grumbling there, but then they kind of salvaged the first day, if you might say, when they got Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, most people think that that is good value, getting him at number 32.
And what do we expect now going forward with Bridgewater? You've got Christian Ponder still under contract for one more year. No one expects him to be the starter. Matt Cassel signed a new 2-year deal, $10 million, after he voided the second year of the contract he signed in 2013. How do we see this playing out going forward?
I still see Matt Cassel beginning next season as the starter. Norv Turner really likes him. That was a key reason why they locked him up for 2 years. Norv likes Teddy Bridgewater, but as his quarterback of the future. Everybody you talk to says Norv is not going to rush a quarterback. So I fully presume they'll bring Teddy along slowly. And there's less pressure on him being number 32 versus number 8 or number 9. You're not going to hear the weekly questions as much, why isn't this guy playing?
But there was an indication over the weekend that Teddy Bridgewater will get some of the first-team reps during the upcoming organized team activities. Possibly he'll get first-team reps in training camp. Who knows? Is there a sense anywhere in the organization or within the media that it's just a matter of time before Bridgewater leapfrogs Matt Cassel?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if Bridgewater pulls a Russell Wilson in the preseason and you absolutely have to start him, yeah. But I think it's going to be a gradual process. I think they don't want to throw him in there until they feel that he's ready. And I think Cassel will probably end up starting the season. And then obviously we'll see how Cassel looks and go from there.
The reaction, if any, by Cassel and Ponder to the decision to draft a quarterback. Do we know? Good, bad, otherwise?
No, neither has talked to any media yet, although I did ask Christian Ponder prior to the draft if he hopes they don't take a quarterback, or I said, basically, do you care if they take a quarterback? And he said, I hope they don't. So Christian Ponder was certainly didn't want him to take a quarterback up high. He can see the writing on the wall. As for Cassel, I asked him that same question prior to the draft, and he really had no comment on that.
How secure is Ponder's position on the roster? He signed one of those contracts that now is fully guaranteed for guys taken in the top 20 or thereabouts. So he's going to get his money this year, whether he's on the Vikings or not. Is there a possibility he would be traded by the team?
You know, Rick Spielman came out and said he wasn't going to trade him during the draft, and I don't think they'll trade him imminently. I think they still want to get a look at this guy in OTAs and minicamps and what have you. But, you know, the key question is, what are you going to get for him? I mean, he has shown not much as a starter so far in the NFL. So is it really worth trading for him if you're going to get next? Question that they might have to ask themselves.
Now, the Vikings passed on taking a quarterback with the 8th overall pick. They ultimately slid down to number 9 where they got Anthony Barr, but then got back into the round. There was talk / speculation / reports that they were trying to get to number 22 to get Johnny Manziel. How accurate was the idea that the Vikings, before drafting Bridgewater at 32, tried to get to 22 to get Manziel?
You know, I know that they liked him not enough to take him at number 8 or number 9, which they traded down to. But I cannot say fully that he was the guy they absolutely wanted over Bridgewater. I know they liked Bridgewater a lot, but whether they liked Manziel better, I can't fully say, to be honest.
And how do you balance that going forward, the idea that you kind of wanted Manziel, you didn't get Manziel, so you love the one you're with in Teddy Bridgewater? Do you anticipate any issues in the organization going forward, depending upon how well Manziel plays and how well or not well Bridgewater plays?
You know, I think on one hand, the Vikings are seeing what's happening in Cleveland and all the craziness surrounding Johnny Football and them barring national media, etc. And I think they're saying on one hand, we're glad we don't have to deal with that. I mean, obviously you don't have that with Bridgewater. But only time will tell, because if Johnny Manziel excels as a football player and becomes the next Fran Tarkenton, whom some people have compared him to, that'll be remembered for a long, long time.
Let's move higher up the draft board to the decision to take Anthony Barr at number 9. What did the Vikings see in him, and how does he fit into the rotation as a rookie?
They just love his size and his athleticism, and they just see that he has so much upside. He's only played linebacker for 2 years after entering UCLA as a running back. So they envision him really blossoming. And Mike Zimmer's made it clear he wants to pressure the quarterback, and they think that this is going to be a guy who can create havoc for opposing quarterbacks. They obviously lost their top pass rusher in Jared Allen, so they need some help at pass rusher.
But big money to Everson Griffin. Brian Robinson previously got a decent contract. Corey Wooten joins via free agency. Is Barr going to be a defensive end, or is he going to line up from time to time at linebacker?
I think they're pretty much looking at him mostly as a linebacker. And a lot of people have talked about Everson Griffin's contract, but it's really front-loaded. I mean, he's the key question mark. I mean, he was solid in 2012, didn't look so great last year, and how's he going to look now getting this huge money? So he's the big question on the defensive line. Brian Robinson, I mean, I think you know what you're going to get from him, consistency, and Corey Wooten's a nice addition there as well.
How tempted do you believe the Vikings were at number 9 to take Aaron Donald, the defensive tackle from Pitt, drawing comparison to guys like Warren Sapp? He hung around until the Rams took him at 13. Did the Vikings give him any serious consideration at 9?
I think they gave him some consideration. Mike Zimmer likes him, you know, long arms, kind of can be an anchor on the line. And I think they're wondering about Sharif Floyd, but I think it might have helped Floyd's cause that in March he made a concerted effort to drop weight. He lost 25 pounds. He gave up meat. So he was looking really good when he showed up for the mini late April. And, you know, there's things about him that Mike Zimmer's not enamored with, apparently. I mean, he's got short arms and that sort of thing. But I think he showed enough the shape that he was in that it's not like we got to replace this guy right away or anything like that.
Seems like every year at this time there's talk about reducing the number of times Adrian Peterson touches the football, and then it's time to play the games, and Adrian Peterson ends up getting the full load as he always has. Do you see it changing this year with a new coaching staff?
Yeah, I think there's a definite concerted effort to reduce Adrian's carries. This is the last year he'll play in the NFL in his 20s. He's 29. They realize that, and he was battered last year, missed 2.5 games in December due to injuries. And now they got a guy they're intrigued with, third-round pick Jerick McKinnon. I think North Turner thinks he can be a kind of a Darren Sproles type, whom he had in San Diego to help take some of the load off of Adrian Peterson and be a third down back.
You know, I previously had thought that the day is coming that Adrian Peterson will come to the Vikings and say, you can't put a passing game on the field to complement my skills. I'd like to go somewhere else to finish my career. But now that I look at what's happened with so many other high-priced players, especially this year, I feel like the day is going to come even sooner that Peterson is involuntarily removed from the team because of how much he's making. How do the Vikings continue to justify paying him more than $10 million, well over $10 million a year, when running backs out there are making $2.5, $3 million a year?
Well, I think this is a key year for him. I mean, I think everybody, he's under contract with crazy money going up to $15 million range or so through 2017. I don't think anybody thinks he's going to last making those numbers up until then. But, you know, there's been reports that this possibly could be his last season coming up with the Vikings. I think that's extreme. I think this is a key season for Adrian Peterson to show that he's not going to return to 2012 where he gained 2,000 yards, but he has to show that he's closer to being that kind of back than the kind of back he was last season when he gained 1,266.
Well, no one knows when the end is going to come for Adrian Peterson in Minnesota, but the end has come for our visit today. Chris, thanks as always for your time. We'll be keeping a close eye on what the Vikings are up to this offseason. We'll be checking out your work at the St. Paul Pioneer Press website. Thanks again. We'll talk soon.
All right. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
All right. There he is, Chris Thomas in St. Paul Pioneer Press. Check out his work there. Check him out on Twitter. I believe it's at Chris Thomason with no H. Chris Thomason. It is Chris Thomason, T-O-M. A-S-S-O-N. When we come back, It's time for you to call me something that may include the letters ASS. It's PFT Planet Time. Pick up the phone. Give us a call, 888-237-5269. And number again, 888-237-5269. We've got some questions already, some good questions via Twitter, not to be confused with bad questions. We always have good questions. So I don't even need to say they're good questions. If I say we have questions, it's implied that they're good questions. Give us some good questions by phone as well. 888-237-5269. We'll be right back to CPFT Live. There's the PFT Planet logo, which means the time has come to start answering your questions. Before I can answer your questions, I need you to ask me one. How about C. Crawl at Twitter? Super Bowl 49, Seahawks versus Patriots. What say you? I say it's way too early to make Super Bowl predictions. I make mine as late as possible. I make mine on the first day of the regular season, and it will be in Seattle this year. I'll be in a hotel in Seattle that morning, trying to rush to get everything done. It's like, well, delayed it as long as I can, and I'll make my Super Bowl pick. Seahawks, Patriots, not unreasonable, very plausible. With the Patriots, though, the question is, as they continue to dominate the AFC East, can they dominate the rest of the conference? Broncos, Patriots, right now it feels like the Broncos are the better team. It feels like the Broncos have widened the gap, even though the Patriots have picked up Darrelle Revis. I look at the Patriots as a team and I say this is going to have to be another situation, and we've seen them do it before, where the sum of the parts is greater than the individual value. They put something special together. Can they do it? Who knows? Who knows how many times Tom Brady has left to try to get to the Super Bowl and win it? Maybe this Jimmy Garoppolo draft pick gives him the kick in the butt necessary to propel him to one more Super Bowl, or maybe more than one more Super Bowl before it's all said and done. And in the NFC, made this point yesterday, between the Seahawks, 49ers, and Saints, whoever of those three is the highest seed, that's going to be the favorite to get to the Super Bowl. So it comes down to taking care of business week in and week out. Can you win enough games so you are higher than the others, so you force those teams to come to you instead of you having to go to them when it's time to play in the postseason? In an era where home field advantage week in and week out means less than it used to, it means plenty in the postseason. Next up, we go to the phone lines. Brian in Washington, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Brian?
How's it going, Mike? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for the call. What's going on?
Anytime. I want to discuss the scarcity of today's running back position and basically the dinosaur extinction kind of moniker that they have. We're seeing more and more in the sense that if teams are signing strictly like great pass catchers in the backfield, I figured now it's getting to a point where if you can't catch 40 to 50 balls a year, then you probably need not apply, you know, to the NFL. I honestly think that gone are the days of the run, the run game opening up the passing attack. I think it's the exact opposite now. The passing attack really opens up the run game, and I just think that You probably never see, chances are we'll never see a running back be drafted in the top three ever again, like Trent Richardson. I think teams are being extremely smart with holding off their draft picks until at least the late second to early third round. It's just that this position has devalued itself so much, and that it's really becoming a quarterback pass first league that teams really can't afford to make sure what happened to Trent Richardson, happens again. They just can't take that chance.
Yeah, Brian, that's a great point, and I see a lot of different reasons for that. Thank you for your call. The ongoing push of the game toward passing the football has contributed to the devaluation of the running back position, but also teams figured out several years ago that it makes more sense to have two or three guys who are part of a tailback rotation. Now, I remember that there were plenty of guys in the 70s, 80s, and 90s who got better as the game went along, who would wear down defenses, who would break the big run at some point in the third or fourth quarter. We don't see that as much anymore because most teams are using two and three guys. And by doing that, you keep guys healthy, you keep them fresh, you extend their careers, and You avoid having to pay someone huge money. You don't create a monster at the position, a guy who takes over the team, a guy who has to be paid huge money, and Adrian Peterson. A LaDainian Tomlinson, that didn't work over the long term in San Diego. And the best example, Sean Alexander, cut a year or so after getting a big money contract that he worked year after year after year to get. So a lot of factors are going into this. And part of the reality, we had Chris Thomason on the show earlier. He talked about how Anthony Barr, the defensive end, well, linebacker from UCLA, had gone to UCLA as a running back. He is thrilled, I'm sure, that he was moved from running back to linebacker, got drafted a lot higher, will make a lot more money in the NFL because of it. Ben Tater, the Browns, recently said if he had to do it all over again, he'd be a safety instead of a running back. We're going to see elite players begin to gravitate more away from that position, which is only going to cause the position to have less and less value at the NFL level. Back to the Twitter bag. I always call it Twitter bag. What should I call it? Back to the Twitter page? Back to the Twitter list? Back to the Twitter something, at Mark Bono. Why is the league so worried about the draft on Mother's Day when they have games on Thanksgiving and Christmas sometimes? Well, because it's a different kind of holiday. See, Thanksgiving and Christmas, when Christmas lands in that weekend window, those are captive audience holidays. Those are days when you're at your house. Those are days when the TV is going to be on. Otherwise, family members would have to interact, and we don't want that. This is everybody at home. It's cold. There's a fire on. And, you know, for a lot of families, the football game is just the background noise. It's just that thing that's moving around. Doesn't matter as far as the Nielsen rating points are considered. You just have the TV on to football. Who cares if you're actually paying attention? So that's why football makes sense on Thanksgiving, when people are pressed together for 12 hours in the same house all day long. And Christmas, if you can't get into that Saturday, Sunday, maybe even Monday window. With Mother's Day and the draft, I mean, the problem is, it's kind of like a whole weekend thing. You're with mom. You're not really home. You're not sitting around a TV. You're out doing things for your mother. You're getting gifts for your mother. And for the people who work in football operations, you're spending Mother's Day out there chasing undrafted free agents, which is a big part of the draft process, especially with only seven rounds. So the NFL trying to avoid Mother's Day in the future. Peter King thinks it's going to move to that weekend in between where the draft always was and Mother's Day weekend, that last weekend on the cusp of late April, early May. April 30 to May 2 would be the dates next year. We'll see if that's what happens. Let's see what Randall in Los Angeles has to say. Randall, you're on PFT Live. What's up, man?
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it. So I just wanted to talk about maybe the improvement of the Vikings defense this year. I think they had a very underrated defensive draft. And, you know, they bring in Coach Mike Zimmer. Last year, probably one of the worst defensive teams in the NFL besides maybe the Cowboys. But where do you see them headed, the defense headed this coming season?
Well, yeah, a coach makes a huge difference just via his arrival, and the Vikings needed to shake things up. Whatever they were doing wasn't working, at least it wasn't working consistently. And Mike Zimmer, a guy who has managed to have great defensive performance without a lot of star players. After the 2012 season, when the Bengals had made it to the playoffs for the second straight year, a lot of those guys were free agents. Nobody came after them. Nobody pounced on them. They ended up staying in Cincinnati. So Zimmer's a guy who can get the most out of what he has. I like his approach on both sides of the ball. He's not going to have a system that he forces onto his players, even if they don't fit it. He's going to take his players and he's going to adapt his system, adapt his approach to match who he has. And now he's got some better players. They have high hopes for Anthony Barr. I know a lot of people didn't like that pick. Everybody wants a flashy fantasy football style pick, but Barr could be racking up some sacks for the Vikings. The cornerback position has been suspect in the past. We'll see if that gets any better. But Zimmer may have a big impact in making the team better, regardless of who the pieces are. Just his presence could make it better. But they have spent the money. They've brought in multiple defensive linemen. I think defense begins and ends with the quality of your pass rush. So the Vikings could be getting a lot better on defense. And you know, used to be able to say the Vikings are great on offense. All they need is to get a little bit better on defense. Well, these Vikings need to get better on both sides of the ball. Speaking of the Vikings, let's go to Minnesota. Elliot, you're on PFT Live.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me. My question is whether or not the pass-catching positions in today's NFL are overvalued. Just this past week, we saw Brandon Marshall sign a new extension for $30 million, 3 years. That's about $10 million a year. We saw Sammy Watkins get traded up for by the Bills, and they had to trade away two first-round picks. But we're talking about a position that, even on a good day, is probably only going to touch the ball about five or six times. Is that a wise investment? I personally don't think so. And the same could go for tight ends. As we see these positions get larger and larger contracts based on the passing game, could that money be better spent elsewhere by wise NFL teams? Thanks a lot.
Well, and thank you. And you make a great point when you look at what Brandon Marshall was going to get, when you look at what the Bills gave up to get Sammy Watkins, and then you've got Jimmy Graham still sitting out there, available for a pair of first-round draft picks. Now, it's almost unheard of in this day and age for teams to consider giving up that much. But when you consider that the Bills ultimately sacrificed the 9th overall pick in this year's draft, plus next year's first-round pick, plus next year's 4th-round pick to get Sammy Watkins, I don't think it's crazy to think that a team should consider giving up a first-round pick in 2015 and 2016 for Jimmy Graham. And under this theory that these players are getting a lot of the money, it would make sense. And I think that even though a great receiver doesn't touch the ball many times during the course of a game, his presence ends up opening up the offense for the running game, for the other receivers, for everything the quarterback who gets the bulk of the money is trying to do. If you have a great receiver who commands double coverage everywhere he goes, it is a lot easier to dictate your offense to the defense because you know that the game plan begins and ends with stopping that great receiver. So he may not touch the ball at all. That's going to be one of the real problems in Washington this year. Getting DeSean Jackson to realize that even if he doesn't gain as many or more yards this year in Washington than he gained last year in Philly, that he will still have had a great impact on the offense. And he's not going to care about that. He's going to want to show that they were wrong in Philly. And in his mind, I believe, the way to show that they were wrong is to have an even better year. Well, he can have a better year and still have lower stats. Good luck convincing a kid who wants to go out and catch the football all the time that that's true. But don't underestimate the value of a great receiver on the rest of the offense and in turn the rest of the team. Back to the Twitter something at Brebos1099. What's the over-under for the Rams to start cleaning house? Hashtag I'll take week 6. Hashtag Fisher, Sneed, Bradford. Hashtag see ya. Look, the Rams have been very competitive in the toughest division that we have seen in a long, long time. Top to bottom, four-team division. You could argue that you've got three of the best teams in the league in that division. Cardinals didn't make it to the playoffs. What would the Cardinals have done if they had made it to the playoffs last year? We saw a 9-7 Cardinals team get to the Super Bowl. What would the 10-6 Cardinals last year in that division, the only team that's won in Seattle the last 2 years, what would they have done if they had made it to the postseason? So I think we have to understand that it's a tough situation in that division. It's a tough situation in St. Louis. Tickets aren't selling. There's a lot of uncertainty about where the team's going to be. I think Fisher, Sneed are in place beyond this year, well beyond this year. Bradford, this could be it. They've been very loyal to him. They didn't trade him this year. Well, first of all, who's going to give $14 million to a guy who's coming off a torn ACL? I think after this year, they're going to make a long-term decision about Bradford. Keep in mind, he had 14 touchdown passes against 4 interceptions before he tore that ACL. Let's go back to the phone line. Josh in Cincinnati, you're on PFT Live. What's up, Josh?
Hey, guys. Huge Bengals fan. Andy Dalton, man, he's gotten us to the playoffs 3 years in a row, 3 losses in a row. I mean, Peyton Manning did that, and then he finally broke through in his 4th playoff appearance. But you guys think Andy Dalton can do that?
Well, it's a great question. I wouldn't compare Andy Dalton to Peyton Manning because Andy Dalton's not going out there and throwing for gigantic numbers. The Bengals have been successful and gotten to the playoffs because of a great defense, because they have played offense smartly with Jay Gruden, who's now gone, Mike Zimmer coordinating the defense, who's now gone. I don't think Dalton is a guy you look at and say he's a short-list franchise quarterback, but he has taken the team to the playoffs 3 straight years. No other quarterback in Bengals history has managed that. The question is, what is his ceiling? And how responsible is he for his current floor? How much of it is Dalton that has gotten the team to 3 straight playoff appearances? And that's going to be the challenge in valuing him, and that's going to be the challenge in making the long-term commitment to a guy who possibly has just been in the right place at the right time, possibly many other quarterbacks out there who would have done as well, if not better, than Andy Dalton, including the guy that was on the board when they picked Andy Dalton. Colin Kaepernick was the next pick in that 2011 draft. And with A.J. McCarron in the building, who knows how this is going to play out. But I think Andy Dalton's the guy for now. And look, consider what the Bengals have been through the last, forever. The Bengals have not had a consistent contender. And I believe Mike Brown, the owner of that team, is happy to have a consistent contender. Who cares if you don't get to the Super Bowl? Who cares if you don't win the Super Bowl? It's about having a team that people get excited about. Even if you come close, More people get engaged, more people get involved, more people think this year is the year. That's what the NFL wants. In every city, a sense that this year is the year, because that keeps the fan base engaged. And the Bengals have made a lot of money through the years where everyone knew this year wasn't the year. Now that you can say the Bengals are consistently in the mix to contend, that may be good enough for Mike Brown, which means it's good enough to keep Andy Dalton around. That's good enough for this day's edition of PFT Live. 5:30 p.m. Eastern tonight, Pro Football Talk on NBCSN, taking a closer look at the off seasons and the coming football seasons of the Saints, the Buccaneers, and the Tennessee Titans. Drew Brees and Mike Evans scheduled to join us. Ross Tucker and Eric Casilius and Sean King in studio. I'll be right here. We'll see you at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time for a full hour heading into, what is it? Hockey. It's the Kings and the Blackhawks. I've been following it. The Penguins are out now, so I really don't follow it as closely. But Kings Blackhawks tonight, I assume. Last night it was Canadians and Rangers. I actually watched a lot of that. It's hard for me once the Penguins are out, but it's still playoff hockey. It's intense. It's fun to watch. Hopefully you'll enjoy watching our show before you watch the hockey. And hopefully you'll be hanging out at ProFootballTalk.com all afternoon until we get started at 5:30 p.m. Eastern and during and after, because we've got content all day. We had like 60 stories yesterday, and it's May. There's plenty of stuff going on, plenty of rookie signings, plenty of stuff happening at the owners' meetings. Check us out at ProFootballTalk.com. See you back here tomorrow. Have a great day.